It is.
Here?
No, he couldn't make it. Good evening, folks, and welcome to tonight's regularly scheduled City Council meeting. The meeting is called to order. I kindly ask our City Clerk, Mr. Landberg, to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown?
Here.
Don Cummins?
Here.
Ralph Dantino?
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Here.
Sam Hill?
Here.
Gene Kilberg?
Here.
Craig Maladra?
Here.
Richard Marks?
Here.
Ron Singer?
Here.
Don Vogelsberg?
Here.
We have a full house tonight, folks. Very exciting. We have some very special events this evening. Very special indeed. And without further ado, we're going to begin. But first, we always begin a City Council meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think it's only appropriate that tonight we ask Mr. Einwick and Mr. Swanson to please lead us in the pledge. Thank you, gentlemen. Got bigger night with the microphones are on. This is a big night, isn't it? A little more enthusiasm, Einwick, for God's sake. Mr. Einwick, could you join us at the podium? Ladies and gentlemen, here in the building and those watching from home and around the world, because this is broadcast via the web, this is Mark Einwick. Mark Einwick will be taking the oath of office to serve as our next deputy fire chief.
That is correct.
And you have served with the Geneva Fire Department for how long, sir?
It will be 20 years in September.
Is that right?
Yes.
Unbelievable. You have big shoes to fill.
Yes, I do.
Were you at the party Friday night?
Yes, I was. I'll admit it, yes, I was there.
Yes, you were. That was a fun party, wasn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it good to see Spencer go?
I'll take the political route and no comment.
No comment. Okay. That was a good party. Well deserved.
Yeah.
So, big day for you. Very exciting. You've got some special guests with you this evening as well?
Yes, I do. I have evidently a lot.
That's good. You should. Would you like to introduce those most special to you?
Yes.
I know they all are. So.
Okay. My crew, stand up. Okay.
Wow.
Yes, I have my wife, Angela.
Hi, Angela.
And in no particular order, my son, Rhett, my son, Caden, my daughter, Madison, my daughter, Lizzie. She's holding my son, Wyatt. My daughter, Carolyn, in the middle in the back. My parents, Otto and Judy, and my mother-in-law, father-in-law, Henry and Carol.
Nice. You should run for office, dude. You got half the votes. Wow.
Yes.
That is pretty cool.
All present and accounted for.
Are they?
Yes.
And you're going to celebrate this evening with dinner or perhaps treat
yes,
everybody else to dinner, all the firefighters? See, the D.C. always treats.
Yeah.
The next promotion, they just go and eat dessert.
That's right. So, that's true.
Well, we're very proud of you.
Thank you.
You've had the pleasure of serving for 20 years. A lot of changes.
Yes.
Positive changes?
Absolutely.
What's your most memorable event throughout your career?
Making it 20 years.
Is that right?
They all kind of blend together.
Yeah.
And there isn't any one particular that stands out. And I'm just excited for the position and excited to continue. And hopefully I will live up to the reputation of my predecessor and continue to move the department forward and make it a better department and leave it better than I found it.
I'm certain you will. You clearly earn the respect of the men and women who serve with you. What's your secret?
Be nice.
That's it?
That's it.
You guys got a cakewalk, man. This guy's going to be a deputy chief.
No, there's no secret. Just treat everybody like you want to be treated, and we're all here to do the same job.
Yeah.
So.
And obviously, Mrs. Einwick is very special to put up with your unusual schedule and the demands and the expectations.
Yes. She's going to have to get used to me being home every night now. Instead.
Yeah, that's going to be brutal, isn't it? So the DCs don't do the 24 on, 48 off? You guys are what, like 6 on, 36 off or something? Is that what it is?
Depends.
Well, the city clerk has the authority to deliver to you the oath of office.
Okay.
But I have the pleasure of presenting Mrs. Einwick with the gold badge that I understand you will be pinning on your husband after his swearing in or prior to. I'm not certain what the protocol is.
What am I?
Yeah, 1958 Eagle Scout has no clue. Right after the swearing in.
Yes.
Look at this. Here is the oath of office for the city clerk. Mrs. Einwick, I have a badge for you. And yes, the whole family, please. Whatever the soon-to-be DC would like. Check, check, check. Explain to everybody all this cool stuff.
This is yours. Well, this is going to be my helmet, and this is my dress hat, and I just thought it would be nice for the kids to have it here and feel like they're a little bit part of the ceremony. So,
more importantly, explain to me how you got these guys to put a suit up. That's not. You're looking good.
There are some days they would rather wear a suit.
Is that right?
Yes.
Please, everyone, make certain you get a hold of this. This is pretty cool. Congratulations. Very cool. Well done on the pinning of the badge, too. Nice job. Okay, Swanee. Oh, bring the whole family, man. Mr. Clerk, before we swear in Mr. Swanson, please, does everyone know who this handsome devil is? This is Kevin Swanson, a.k.a. Swanee, a dedicated public servant, much like Mr. Einwick and the rest of the firefighters. Kev, tell us a little bit about yourself. We know you've been around for a long time. We know you come from a family of public servants, but for those of you who don't know and those watching who don't know, share with us a little bit about the Swanee magic.
I've been doing this for 18 years. I started as a fireman, a paid on call in St. Charles. Followed my father. He was 34 years on the job. He retired as the fire chief of St. Charles. Oh, yeah. I've been here in Geneva for 14 years now. Going on, my anniversary is coming up June 29th for 11 years full time. So, and I have my clan here.
Well, let's introduce the clan.
It's not quite as big. My wife Chrissy, my daughter Olivia, my daughter Jessica, my son Joey, and my sister Amy's here, and my mother Karen.
All right. Welcome. So, Joey, how old are you, man?
Yeah.
There you go. 3. Excellent. Well done. I asked your father that. He used just one finger.
It was at the
party. Which delayed the promotion. So are you just like your dad, Swanee?
No, I'm not nearly as smart as my father.
You miss him?
Yeah.
He's a good man.
Yep, that's probably my only... The only bad thing about being promoted is that he's not here to...
Oh, he's here.
I mean, he's watching, obviously, absolutely, but he's not
physically. He's probably saying, fix your collar.
Probably is.
Yeah, so. What message do you have to the men and women you work with?
Thanks for putting up with me for all the years. And hopefully they keep putting up with me. I've learned so much since I came here to Geneva, and I've really become the man that I am today because of the influence of the people that I work with and work for, and I appreciate everybody. There isn't a day I go to work that I don't learn something, and that's incredible.
That's awesome. And, of course, because of the family, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly I learn how impatient I am when I think I'm not.
Now, what's this going to mean to your work schedule?
I am getting switched shifts. I've been on gold shifts since I started.
And gold shift, for those of us who don't know, means?
It's... Lieutenant Loomis, Lieutenant Tishner, Whiteman, Rodney, and Scott Anderson are my usual crew, including Sarah and Glenn Baum. And then we have our paid on calls who rotate through.
Right.
Now I'm going to redshift. So I'll be working with Lieutenant Forrest, Firefighter Benz, Firefighter Clark.
Mm-hmm. Chad Clark, the big guy.
Yes. And then Lentz, Firefighter Lentz. And then... Mike Plumbee and Gary Grand George also.
Fantastic. So which is a better shift, red or gold?
We're all to Geneva Fire Department.
I see.
Gold.
I see. Look at Loomis looking at us. As Loomis inches toward retirement, he's more politically correct than ever. It's unbelievable.
That'll never happen.
That'll never happen. Chrissy, I understand you would like to pin the shield on the soon-to-be lieutenant?
Yes.
You got it. And Mr. Clerk, are you ready for the swearing-in? Wherever you went? Afterward, it's all yours. Who wants to hold the microphone for Dad?
It's all yours, Bill.
Yes, sir. Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I'm Kevin Swanson. Having been appointed, to the office of fire lieutenant, in the city of Geneva, county of Kane, aforesaid, do solemnly swear, Do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
And I will faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office.
The duties of the office.
Of fire lieutenant according to the best of my ability.
The duties of
fire lieutenant.
Fire lieutenant to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, gentlemen. Okay, who's going to lead us in the chant? Oh, sorry.
Who's going to lead us in the chant?
I heard that chant on Friday night. Very exciting.
Were you out on the street?
Yeah. Oh, you guys were at NATO. That is really cool, isn't it? So, Einwick, you feel special? You feel different?
Not yet.
No? How about you, Swanee?
No, not yet.
These are good guys, man. You know, I know the council knows you both very well. The community obviously does as well. But it's an extraordinary breed of people. It really is. And I'm not being obsequious. I'm being genuine. And, of course, Loomis is now retired. So. But, you know, Friday night's party saying goodbye to Spence and then tonight's promotions, I think, is a nice transition. It really is. So we're very proud of both of you. We're extraordinarily proud of the families. We thank you all for the contribution of your time and your talent. And as Deputy Chief Einwick said, I'm certain that everyone here agrees that the department will be far better off and left in better hands because of your involvement, your work, your training, your spirit. So thank you.
Thanks.
Now, you guys want to stick around for a water fund report? Fine, we've got some more.
Intelligent fire department.
If no one objects, we'll continue to item 3C, which is to proclaim May 21st, 2012, as Volunteer Boards and Commissions Recognition Day.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Flanagan, second by Alderman Vogelsberg. The voice vote is sufficient, but it's appropriate that obviously we recognize this tonight because we're also recognizing not only the reappointment, but the stepping down and resignation of some board members as well. So. We have a motion. We have a second. A voice vote is sufficient. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Excellent. Item 3D is to consider the mayor's reappointment. Yes.
Before you go on, just to give an idea to the public, how many people serve on our volunteer boards and commissions? It's 50 to 100, isn't it?
Oh, it's well over 100. It certainly is. And I think the most flattering aspect of it is that there's always folks who want to serve. And hopefully those who are serving or who have served would agree that sometimes getting involved and staying involved is perhaps the most rewarding aspect of all. So those who always raise their hand and say they want to be involved yet again, the challenge is finding an opening, quite frankly. But Geneva's, if anything, is not wanting for a lack of talent with respect to volunteer involvement. So.
And you welcome new applications on the website?
Absolutely. Always. Always. They can always call me directly. They can always send a note, an email, text, whatever you'd like. And my colleague Gene Fornari, of course, has a running list of those openings, and as does Mary and Stephanie. So, item D is to consider mayor's reappointments to the city boards and commissions. You have a list in your packet of those reappointments. As is customary, a note is sent out to those who are serving, asking if they'd like to continue serving. They have responded to me in writing, indicating their desire to continue serving. So those names appear on this list this evening. I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Motion by Alderman Hill.
Second.
Second by Alderman Dantino to appoint those provided in the packet to their respective positions on those respective boards. A voice vote is insufficient, so we're taking a roll call. Mr. Clerk.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Dean Kilberg.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Thank you. And to all those who are continuing to serve, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And now we have the sad duty of saying goodbye to some folks who have been serving as they move on with other interests. Perhaps their time is more strained, and who knows, but nevertheless, they've left an impact, and it's I think, wonderful. So tonight's always a fun opportunity to say thank you and so long. I would like to invite those who are stepping down to the podium. I'm going to steal the handheld mic. We've got a special little going away, but I hope that we can hear from them. And I'm not going to choose you first, so hang in there. Despite you, are you all finished with school yet?
Two more days.
Poof.
Loma.
Cakewalk. Cakewalk. Okay, there's a few folks who could not be with us this evening, but I do think it's important that we recognize them, obviously. From the Board of Police and Fire Commissioners, our good friend Jim Coutts is stepping down. He has served from 2006 through 2012. If you're not aware of what this commission does, I would argue that it's one of the most probably rewarding commissions, but also operates with a great deal of almost anonymity. Not a lot of people know about it. But, you know, these are the men and women who serve on this commission who select those who serve in our public safety positions. So it's very interesting. And Jim Coutts is an extraordinary guy who's done an extraordinary job during, quite frankly, some difficult circumstances. So we're going to miss Jim quite a bit. Let's see. From the Mental Health Board, Mr. Greg Torrance served from 2004 through 2012. We all probably know Mr. Torrance. He actually used to be my neighbor. So a great guy. He was intimately involved in the work of the Mental Health Board for 8 years. And Mr. Torrance is moving on to some other interests, so we thank him as well. Mr. Kuntz, who was on the Strategic Plan Advisory Committee, could not make it this evening. We don't see him anyways. He served from 2005 to 2012. If you don't know Brad Kuntz, you'll know him by his voice. He's like the Barbara Jordan of the Strategic Plan Advisory Committee. For those of you who don't know who Barbara Jordan is, look it up. Extraordinary voice, and he's a great guy, full of enthusiasm, and I think Stephanie would agree. Extraordinary leader as well. So, to those who are with us this evening, where's Tim O'Neill? Do I see Tim?
I don't see him.
I don't see him either. So we're going to skip over. He might show up. We'll see. How about Chris Curione? Is Chris with us? Chris, come on up, man. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good. Welcome.
Thanks.
So you're moving on.
Yep, I'm saying so long.
So long.
Yeah.
So what was the... Now, Chris served on the Strategic Plan Advisory Committee for 3 years, 2009 through 2012, and... I mean, heady times, don't you think?
No doubt. Yeah.
It was
a great time, actually. I also served on the Geneva Natural Resources Committee.
Right. So you know Brad's voice.
Oh, very well.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I'm jealous. I wish I had
isn't that great?
Booming
is right.
Voice like that, yeah.
So what do you enjoy most about what we call SPAC?
You know what? I enjoyed the people the most.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's cool.
Met some great people. Stephanie, you know, being in all the meetings and all her great help, and Brad and all the people on the committee.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we did a lot of good and continue to do good. And
indeed,
you know, Geneva is such a great city just because of all these volunteers and
now,
all the people that put effort.
Why did you get involved originally?
Why?
Was it just an interest of, you know, gosh, so much stuff's going on?
It was just you know what, I had some extra time and wanted to just get involved. I've always wanted to get involved and see how, you know, city works from the inside a little bit, and I had that opportunity. So now, you know, it's just...
Life's busy.
New work demands and soccer practice and,
oh,
you know, all that stuff.
What do you do for a living?
I work at a distribution center for a company called McKesson.
Oh, sure.
In Aurora. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Work in the kind of computer room IT department there. So.
One of those smart guys.
Well, not really. I get help.
They'll be watching tonight, so that'll be exciting when they get to work tomorrow. When they tell. Well, that's cool. We very much appreciate it. Any comments or questions for Chris? Anything in your future? Staying involved as best you can? And
absolutely. Yeah, I'm still working with Jay Womack on NRC, you know, wherever I can help. And
So are you partially responsible for the rain gardens outside?
I, unfortunately, was not part of that effort, but, you know.
Well, Jay tells you what to do anyways, doesn't he?
Rain barrels, yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, I have a special gift on behalf of the council and the community.
Thank you
very
much.
So if I may, I'd like to present this to you.
It's unnecessary, but thank you.
Okay. I want to see what it is, man. Oh, look at that. It's a gift certificate to Batavian restaurants.
I hope not.
No.
I want to stay in Geneva.
It's good living, man. That's just a token of our appreciation.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you. Da-da-da-da. Sue Gibbons. Now, there is a story about Sue Gibbons. It is a good one. Sue Gibbons, retired teacher.
Yes.
From Elmhurst.
Yes.
I don't want to guess how many years.
38 years I taught in Elmhurst.
38 years. What grade level? Elementary, right?
Elementary, and then I did the elementary gifted program for the last 20 years in Elmhurst.
Good Lord. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, the Gibbons are best friends of my parents. In the interest of even fuller disclosure, I believe one of my mom's first dates was your husband.
They can talk about it.
Yeah. So, which still causes strife in the family, as you can imagine. Right, Bob? Isn't that right?
Right.
Yeah, unbelievable. My Bob Gibbons, Sue's husband, and my father have been friends since, good Lord, kindergarten?
Grade school.
Grade school. Isn't that amazing? And the big guy turned 74 on Wednesday. Don't forget. But Sue came to Geneva, what, golly, it's only been...
We came out here in 2004.
Yeah, and you immediately jumped in.
I think I joined SPAC in 2006.
Amazing. I mean, you raised your hand right away.
I did. I'm a teacher. I raised my hand.
No regrets?
No, none whatsoever. I really enjoyed working on the strategic plan. We were very involved in that process after I came in. And the people were just tremendous, just tremendous.
Now, you recently returned from a trip to visit your son in Europe, correct?
The last time we were there was last May.
Last May, okay.
He's we're going again in September.
And he's in which country?
Germany, Frankfurt.
And what? And he's involved in some sort of espionage or something, right?
That would be accurate.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive, isn't it?
You know, he works for a German chemical company.
And Bob, of course, retired from a chemical company. Unbelievable.
That's why I'm a teacher. No,
that's why you're a teacher. Yeah, no kidding. So what was your most enjoyable experience on SPAC?
I think it had to be the strategic plan. And I also really enjoyed working with the International Cultural Exchange Commission. I was a liaison with that group. And they do a lot of very interesting things. And they're just so enthusiastic that I really enjoyed working with that group.
That's cool. So not just travel more and hang out and...
Go enjoy all the restaurants in Geneva.
Enjoy, yeah. Well, you go to Aurelio's
and the Park District places.
Ah, yes. Yes, of course. Any comments or questions for Sue? Anything at all? Bob, any comments?
No, I don't dare.
You get Sue back for a while?
Pardon me?
You get Sue back for a while, right?
Yes, sir.
That's good. That's good living. And Sue's an extraordinary cook, by the way.
Oh.
Extraordinary cook. So we have a lovely parting gift for you, Sue. It says, good luck with Bob.
Are you going out today?
Hamstring going back and forth. It's
a tough crowd.
Kuntz hasn't shown up, nor has O'Neill. I guess we have Levy. Maureen Levy. Does anybody know who this is?
Does anybody not?
Yeah. Does anybody not know who this is?
I mean that in the best of ways.
Maureen Levy, one of only 100... I hope I have this right. One of only a handful. 100, is it? Senate pages?
30.
30 Senate pages chosen last class, I guess it was.
Last spring, yes.
Last spring. Nationwide.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you're back better for the experience.
Absolutely.
Incredible. Now, Maureen brought in a gift for me tonight. Her parting gift to me for having had the pleasure of serving. And... no need to pan this for the cameras, but look at what Maureen gave me. What's that say, Maureen?
Vote Democratic.
That's clever. They sell these over at the...
The Cocoon.
The Cocoon. They have both kinds, I assume.
No Republican.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What about none of the above? They sell those? No?
I didn't see any.
That is very nice. That is very nice. There you go, Chuck. I'm kidding you. And, of course, your parents are here.
Yes.
Is there another party at your house this summer after graduation?
No, I don't think so.
You had a party before you went to go be a Senate page?
Well, we have graduation. Yeah.
Okay.
Next week.
So what are your plans? Where are you off to?
University of Dayton.
That's right, the Flyers.
Yep. I'm going to double major in secondary education and political science.
Perfect. Got that, Sue? Secondary education and political science?
Hoping to become a high school socialized teacher.
Really?
Maybe back at Geneva someday.
We'll see. Kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. So your desire to enter the political fray, if you will, the inside.
I would want to just be involved in local politics.
Yeah.
Maybe a Dawn Vogelsberg in the future, an alderwoman.
How long do we have to wait?
She's 18, right?
I'm sorry, to be at 9.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So obviously you're a very unique young lady. And
thank you.
Extraordinarily talented.
Thank you.
And dad are obviously proud. What makes you so special in your own words? Why do you like all this stuff? Why do you, I mean...
I guess, I don't know, I have my own, like, interests that I've always had in politics, but I've been lucky enough to go through Geneva Public School and have teachers that have inspired me along the way to want to, number one, become a teacher, but number two, have really sparked my interest in policy and understanding government in America's history.
If you could change one thing about, quote, government at any level, what would you change?
I guess my biggest annoyance, I guess, when I was a page especially, was that it seems like a lot of small things get done when big things are on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And there should just be more focus on the big things, I feel like, sometimes, instead of appointing judges constantly and this kind of thing. I mean, there's a need for that, too, but...
So you're looking forward to the debate at the high school level with your students and hopefully inspire them like you've been inspired?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah,
need,
I hope so.
Do you need a coaster for your desk or anything?
I'm good for now, thanks.
You good? Anything else you'd like to share with the council or the community? I'm sure all your friends are watching. You're probably thinking, oh, God, there's Levy again.
I don't know. I've just really enjoyed the opportunity to serve on this committee with Ms. Dawkins. I found out about it through student government, which is one of my favorite memories of high school,
mm-hmm.
being able to shadow city officials. And when we did the mock city council meetings, I always had a good time with that. I'm sad to be leaving, but excited for the next 4 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you weren't intimidated being the youngest member of SPAC.
No, everybody was really nice.
Yeah. That's what I even said. Just be nice. Yeah. Dawn, you had something you wanted to add? I saw your hand go up.
But we'll miss you because you really did bring a lot to student government besides all your other talents. And I think the program will miss you. So you got to start talking it up. You have 2 days to influence a bunch of people.
2 more days.
No pressure. You can do it.
Any tribute to your mom and dad for putting up with you?
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
The sincerity.
Thank you.
Just a little something.
Thank you.
And thank you for the little gift.
Sure.
Okay, you're good.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, Ashes is a current little boy.
Hey-o.
Oh, please, Dean, yes.
She'll also be missed at Jen Ho, where she can turn into sweet and sour chicken about as quickly as anyone over there.
I think we've all worked at Jen Ho.
Yeah,
I mean, Mark Vogelsberg worked there. I worked there.
Two out of the three kids.
Holy moly.
It's mandatory.
So are you going there tonight for dinner?
No, I worked last night, though, so I got my shift in for the week.
You only work once a week? Oh, yeah. Oh, my
gosh.
Let's
get the mic over there. Mrs. Lee is hiring.
Okay. Just for everyone, just so everyone knows as well, the names of volunteer boards and commission members who served during fiscal year 2011 and 2012 are being displayed on Channel 10 throughout the week. So if you're watching and you're curious who these 100-plus people are, you'll see their names scrolling throughout the week. And, you know, that Channel 10 broadcasts this information regularly. So, Maureen, your name will be in lights, as will Mrs. Gibbons and others and Chris. And so it'll be good. So thank you all very much for joining us. And thank you for accepting our token of appreciation for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. These are the loudest. Amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments to the agenda tonight, ladies and gentlemen? Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and can be enacted by one motion.
So move.
Second.
Alderman Singer makes that motion. Alderman Flanagan makes the second. Any questions or comments? If not, a roll call is in order. Mr. Clerk.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Dean Kilberg?
Aye.
Kirk Maladra?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. We jump down to item number 10, municipal bills for payment, and we kindly ask our city clerk to read the bills for consideration.
Bills for payment total $2,759,884.44.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills. As read, the individual bills are available on the city website in this aldermanic council packets.
The motion by Brown to pay the bills as read and displayed on the city's website and available in the packets is seconded by Alderman Hill. Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Don Cummings.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Dean Kilberg?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Now, according to my notes, folks, all items following an item in Section 11 have been approved, so we're jumping to Item 12. But in the interest of anyone attending tonight who has any new business they'd like to share with us, I'll entertain new business at this time.
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Singer?
Sir. I would like to take this opportunity on behalf of not only myself but the City Council to thank Mary McKittrich and those committee members that were so involved in what a marvelous event we had Saturday with our centennial. It was just really a well-planned, well-executed program, and we just can't thank you enough and the people that served on your committee as well. It was just very well done. Thank you.
Well said. Anyone else from the dais or the audience? Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, echo that, what Alderman Singer said. I thought everybody really enjoyed themselves. I thought you really did a terrific job, Mary, and everybody in your committee. And also want to thank my group for planting on Saturday. Some of them even came through during the centennial, but most of them were out there planting their flowers so everybody can reap the benefits and enjoy all the lovely plants out there. Thank you again to them. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to say that the Geneva High School bass team won conference on Friday. Instead of being at school, they fished all day at Chabanaw, and they brought home the conference trophy.
I was wondering if you were going
to
say that.
And
who are one of those team members?
Well, there are four kids. There's okay. Two boats. Four kids are on the team. Trevor, I don't know his last name, and Alex Pernice. And then Connor Olson won the biggest bass this tournament and the one before. And then, of course, Sam Vogelsberg.
Is that at Lake Chabanaw itself?
Is it? Yeah.
On Lake Chabanaw?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah, Mr. McPeak drove the bus and
oh my goodness.
Instead of school, and yeah.
Life is good.
So they get the bass team has two trophies in the case now.
That's cool. Congratulations. Anyone else? If not, we're moving on. This is riveting. Mr. Van Gescom, you all set? We've got some special guests with us this evening. For those of you watching at home, we're about to discuss the water wastewater rate study presentation on cost of service and rate structure alternatives. Wowzer.
Good evening. Boy, and you just set the tone right there.
And you just tell by the people who stuck around. They're just the riveting. It's riveting.
No.
It's very important. I'm just teasing.
It is. Well, good evening. And like the mayor said, Dave Heider and Tracy Moore are in from Annapolis, Maryland again to give us our second workshop that is before you in paper form. So I will turn the mic over to them. There's no action to be taken tonight, but there is opportunity for discussion and comments. So with that, I will go over to Dave. Thank you.
Welcome back, Dave.
Thank you. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again. Where are you staying tonight?
Geneva, right in town.
Are you?
Sure. We have an early flight. We have a very early flight.
Do you really tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So we don't want to commute, but...
I respect that.
You want to turn down the...
Yep, I got them for you. Well, okay. There you go.
I was just going to say, after this evening, we want to move here. I tell you.
Impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. But we do have a lot to cover tonight, and I realize this is hitting you cold, so there's going to be a lot to take in, so feel free to digest it after the meeting, any questions that you may have. But what we're going to cover this evening, building upon our last meeting, was we're going to talk about cost of service analysis. We're going to look at a financial plan for the water and sewer systems. We're going to look at how we can recover the costs in various rate structure alternatives. Then we're going to benchmark your rates and sample bills with some surrounding communities and then talk about a few scenarios. Just a reminder in terms of where we've been and where we're going. The overall rate setting process, last time we met, we talked about the revenue requirements, what it cost to provide water and sewer service. That was our first workshop, occurred on April 30th. This evening, we're going to talk about how we allocate those costs through a cost of service. We're going to talk about rate design. And then we're going to have a third workshop on June 25th, where we'll come back with our recommendation of rates in the final financial plan. So first off, I want to talk about cost of service, and to be honest, this is the most technical aspect of a rate study. Really, the goal of cost of service is to appropriately allocate revenue requirements, which we looked at last time, which is the cost of providing service. We want to allocate those to the users of the water and sewer system based on the cost of providing them service. So ideally, we would allocate those costs specifically to each individual customer. However, that's not administratively practical. So as a result, you typically group the customers into customer classes. So once you do that, how you allocate costs on the water side is that costs are generally allocated based on volume, so how much somebody uses, and then also based upon peaks they place in the system. so how they cause the system to spike and the ability to meet those peak demands. On the sewer side, it's also based on volume, but then it's based on the strength of the sewage that's produced, how difficult it is to treat. So the cost of service approach on the water side, and again, this is the technical piece, is we take those revenue requirements, we allocate them based on the functional categories, so those associated with treatment, pumping, storage, sending the water out through transmission, distribution, metering, administration, and the fire hydrants. And then those costs are allocated to the various cost categories. So the first three there, the capacity, are based on volume and how people peak the system. So your max day and your max hour, customer service costs, metering costs. And then ultimately those costs are allocated to the customer classes based on how they use water, how they peak the system. So that's the technical aspect. The end result here, when you look at a test year, these are the four customer classes that you have based on the 2011 rates. This is the revenue that was produced. So if I can show here. Revenue that was produced by those rates, the percentage that's collected from each class. Then when we go through the cost of service analysis and say, okay, how much should we be collecting based on how people use water, you can see what the cost of service allocations are supposed to be, and you can see the minor adjustments that should take place. The end result, though, is that your cost of service, your current rates are generating very close, extremely close to the cost of service, which isn't surprising since you've had cost of service studies done fairly recently. So that's really the end takeaway there. You really are collecting, you're not way overcharging one class in comparison to another on the water side. On the sewer side, we do the same thing. We allocate to the functional categories. But on the cost categories, we're looking at volume, and then we're looking at the constituents within the sewage, the solids, the biological oxygen demand, the total nitrogen, and then the customer service costs, and we allocate those to the customer classes. Typically, your residential, commercial, and governmental are all going to produce the same strength of sewage. It's the industrial customers that generally produce a higher strength and have require pretreatment. So doing the same thing on the sewer side, it's actually even closer than it was on the water side in terms of the cost of service. You can see the percentage of revenue you're collecting from each class, what you should be collecting, and then what the minor adjustments would be. Now, I just want to emphasize here that this is a revenue neutral analysis. This isn't saying that your current rates are producing enough revenue in total. It's saying that the way that the revenues are collected from your customer classes is close to appropriate. I want to make that real clear. So we're not saying that your revenues or your rates are generating enough revenue to fund the system. We demonstrated that last time, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. This is purely saying how much you should be collecting from each class. Okay? So as I just alluded to, in terms of a financial plan, we need to look at, this is moving on from cost of service, really what we want in the financial plan is we want to look at what are the necessary increases in revenues for the water and sewer system to really meet two primary goals. The first is we want to fund the system revenue requirements, including the increased capital spending, to fund the system repair and replacement. We spent a lot of time talking about that last time. And then we also want to make sure that we maintain a minimum fund balance equal to 90 days of operating and maintenance expenses. So we talked about that a fair amount last time, and that is the minimum fund balance target that we're using. We're not including debt, as has been used in the past. So if you were to immediately adjust the rates in order to produce the revenue that's needed to cover the revenue requirements, that would result in a one-time, immediate 13% increase in water, 15% increase in sewer. What that looks like for your average residential customer who uses 790 cubic feet per month would be a $7.06 increase overall, water and sewer combined, in their monthly bill. So that's assuming you keep the current rate structure. But those are pretty hefty increases, so what we're proposing or initially proposing is that you do a three-year phase-in and that we increase water revenues 5% in 13, 5% in 14, 5% in 15, and then 6% on the sewer side. The reason we can do that in the first couple years, as we'll show here, you will see some minor shortfalls, but eventually the revenues catch up and you do maintain that 90 days of your operating expenses. So real quick, what we're showing here is this is what we showed you last time is your net revenue requirement. This is the what it costs to provide water on the annual basis. So $4.57 million in fiscal year 13. What your current rates produce, what your current water rates produce, would be $4.39 million. So you can see you're running at a shortfall, and that shortfall grows year over year. So if we do the 5% increases, you can see what the revenue would be under the increases and the subsequent shortfalls or minor surpluses going forward. Exact same thing on the sewer side. You can see the annual shortfalls, the 6% increases, and then I should mention that we're just showing basically annual inflationary increases in 16 and 17. Okay. So that we've now defined how much additional revenue we want to generate each year. So 5% more on the sewer on the water side, 6% more on the sewer side. And now we want to look at how we actually recover those revenues. So we're now looking at the rate structure, which is really how you price it. This is what the customer sees. This is how you price the service. So the revenue requirements and the cost of service reveal how much we should recover from each class. The rate design establishes how we recover that from each class. And a little bit of background, rate design is typically influenced based on the policy objectives of the utility. They may be, we want to increase revenue stability, we want to consider affordability, we want to encourage or discourage water use, we want something that's easy to understand at the customer level, we want to be able to administer it, implement it, we may want to look at an incentive for economic development, and of course we want it to be legal. So those are some typical considerations. Now there's two components to the rate structure. There's a fixed portion and then there's a variable portion. I want to talk about the fixed portion first. This is the portion of the rate structure that somebody pays regardless of how much water they use or sewer they generate. This is the fixed monthly fee. And there's typically two key policy issues related to that. The first is what cost do we recover in that fixed charge? Maybe customer service, administrative costs, debt service. Obviously, the higher the fixed charge, the greater the guaranteed revenue and cash flow, and the majority of your cost in providing water and sewer service are fixed. However, the cons would be the higher that fixed charge is, the more it hurts the really small user. Makes those first quantities of water very expensive. The other policy issue is, okay, how do we apply that fixed charge? Do we do it by a per account? Do we charge based on meter equivalents? So the larger meter you have, the more expensive it is for the fixed charge, or do we do some combination? The key issue there is that we want to make sure that we're consistent with the costs we recover. So if we are simply recovering customer service costs, that should be done on a per bill basis because it doesn't cost you any more to read a big meter than a small meter. So I want to jump into that a little bit more in terms of the fixed charge basis. As I just mentioned, if you do it by number of customers or accounts, there's a one-to-one ratio there. And that's an effective manner if you're simply going to collect customer service and administrative costs. The current approach on the water side within the city is that you have a set of equivalents. The higher the meter, the more expensive it becomes for the fixed charge. And that was set based on previous rate studies that were done. There is an industry standard for meter equivalents that the American Water Works Association publishes. And that's essentially really based upon the capacity that can go through a meter. So it essentially sizes the fixed charge based upon how much water you can demand on the system. And when I say equivalents, it's essentially if you have a 3/4 inch is one equivalent, that's one household. And if you have a 6-inch meter, that may be equivalent to 40 households. It's just essentially a factor up that accounts for the potential demand that they can pull in the system. And the fourth one, which is what we're recommending be considered, is to use AWW equivalents. Or the number of units behind the meter, whichever is greater. So there's some examples down here below. Here's the number of water customers and sewer customers you have. If we look at the number of equivalents associated with the with your current equivalents, 8,893 for water. If you do the AWWA equivalents, you can see what it would be, so they're obviously higher. And then if you do the equivalents and the multiple units, it would be even higher. And to really drive it home, here's a prime example, an actual account. This is one customer. They have one meter there. It's River Lane Condos. Under the current approach, the number of equivalents or fixed charges they pay is 6.5 times the minimum, or what the three-quarter inch meter would pay. Under AWWA, it would be 16.67 times, and then if you use the number of units, since this is a condo complex, it would be 41. And I'll demonstrate how this actually plays out in a second. It's a lot to take in. But what we're proposing along those lines would be, first on the water side, your current fixed charge uses obviously the Geneva equivalents. It collects 3.3% of your revenues. So if nobody used any water, you would generate 3.3% of your water revenues under your current structure. And it really just recovers administrative costs. What we're proposing is the alternative structure is that we start phasing in the amount of revenue that we collect in that fixed charge. Because, as I mentioned, majority of your costs are fixed, and it would provide significantly increased revenue stability. So the approach here would be to collect 10% more revenue in the fixed charge in 13. I'm sorry, 10% total revenue in the fixed charge, 15% in 14, and then 20% in 15. That would recover administrative costs as well as capacity-related fixed costs. This is how it would actually play out. So here's your current equivalents as they stand, or your current fixed charges as they stand today. Here's what they would be over the three-year phase-in, phasing into recovering more revenue as well as going to the AWWA equivalents. We're proposing the same thing on the sewer side. The only difference there is that you collect a little bit more revenue in the fixed charge currently, but you actually just impose that based on a per-account basis, so you don't charge a higher fixed charge based on meter size on the sewer side. We're recommending the same thing on the sewer side, that we increase that to 20% by fiscal year 15. So you can see the three-year phase in. Okay. Now that everybody's thoroughly confused, we'll move on to the variable portion. And this is the portion of the rate structure that's based upon how much water you use or sewage you generate. It's the metered quantities. The first table here, first chart here, shows your current water rate structure. It's a declining block rate. So the more water you use, the cheaper the per unit of that water becomes. And on the sewer side, you just have a uniform rate structure. No matter how much sewage you generate, you pay the same unit rate. So down below, we have the actual rates. Here's your current water rates. Here's the current blocks. So as you use more and more water, you can see that the charge per 100 cubic feet drops down. You do have a non-industrial usage rate of 223 currently per 100 cubic feet, and then an industrial usage rate, which essentially accounts for the fact that they have higher strength sewage. If we simply generate 5% more revenues in the current year, that's what these rates show here. It's using your current rate structure, generating 5% more water revenue, 6% more sewer revenue. Now, if we go and adopt the approach that I just showed on the fixed charges, so if we go to the AWWA equivalents, collect 10% of our revenue in the fixed charges, this is what the charges would be for water, so 393, 363, 351. And again, same thing on the sewer side. If we collect 10% of our revenue, the sewage rates would stay pretty much where they are right now. And to add one more wrinkle to that, if we, in addition to charging fixed charge based on meter size, using the AWWA equivalents, but if we also give everybody 100 cubic feet with their fixed charge, that's the second alternative here, you can see what the usage rates would be. So, for example, if you use 700 cubic feet in a month, your first 100 cubic feet would be included in that fixed charge, and you'd only pay for the 600 cubic feet above that, is essentially what that alternative two is. As a result, you can see that the rates would have to be higher because we're essentially billing less water and less sewage. And the biggest departure from your current rate structure, the sewer structure would be the same, would be to go to a pyramidal structure. And this kind of turns your current structure upside down. Essentially, the more water you use, the more expensive it becomes until you reach 3,500 cubic feet, which would drop you back down. Really, essentially what this structure is intended to do is to encourage residential conservation. When you're using up to the 1,400 to 3,500 cubic feet, that's typically, you know, irrigation, things of that sort. So this would essentially encourage residential conservation, but yet still give the benefit to the commercial and the large users. You can see what the rates would be as they ramp up and then drop back down. So in terms of some, just summarizing the structures, here's a summary of the water rate structures.
Okay.
The current rate structure, obviously, based for water, based on the fixed charge, you have a declining block rate. If we kept that current structure, the benefit is that everybody would see the same increase. So if we generate 5% more revenues, don't change the structure, everybody would see a 5% increase in their bill. However, a disadvantage is that it doesn't address the fixed revenues or anything with water conservation. Alternative two, we're obviously addressing the increase in fixed revenues, but there would be no structure change on the usage side. Some disadvantages, it would increase the bills for the very small user, and it doesn't encourage water conservation. The alternative two is pretty much the same thing, except now we're including the 100 cubic feet. So the benefit there is that not only does it increase the fixed revenues, it helps the really small user. Does not encourage water conservation, and also, as you saw, it makes the usage rates for everybody else higher because we're including that 100 cubic feet. And the third alternative, going to the fixed charge, AWWA, and the units, using the pyramidal structure, it would increase your fixed revenue, and it would encourage residential conservation. But some real serious considerations on the disadvantage is that it would increase the revenue volatility. So if you think about it, if we have an inclining block rate and we're counting on some revenue at this higher rate and you have an extremely wet year and people don't irrigate as much, you can see greater fluctuations in your revenues. And typically in an inclining block rate structure like that, if you have just a necessary need to use a lot of water indoor because you have a large family, it can have an impact there because they would be forced through the blocks even though they're not using water outside or on a discretionary basis. On the sewer side, summarize, a little bit simpler, obviously. If we keep the current structure, all customers would see that 6% increase. It does not, however, address the fixed revenues. Alternatives 1 and 3 would essentially address the fixed revenues. There'd be no usage rate structure, but again, it impacts the small user. And then the alternative 2 increases the fixed revenues, helps the small user, but it makes the usage charges higher for everybody else. So ultimately, what's most interesting, though, is to see how this impacts customers. And so now we have a number of sheets that show the impacts on customers. And this is the type of thing that I mean that you really need to take away and kind of study to see how it impacts various customers. But what this chart shows is for a residential customer, this would be a really small user at 100 cubic feet, and then your average user at 790 cubic feet, and then a really large user at 2,500 cubic feet. And you can see what the sewer bill under the current, what it is today, I'm sorry, the water and sewer bill, what it is today for each customer. What it would be if you simply keep the same structure but increase the water revenues 5% and sewer revenues 6%. What it would be under the alternative 1, 2, and 3. So this is, having done this a lot, this is always the one of the more difficult things to wrap your mind around because there are winners and losers when you're changing the structure. Not everybody's going to see the same increase. If you have somebody that uses a lot of water as a residential customer and you go to an inclining block rate or a pyramidal structure, they're going to see a bigger increase. Down below, we do show you, though, give you a sense for the percentage of customers that fall into each of these usages. So the first here is the block 0 to 200. About 7.27% of your residential customers fall in that block. And then 15% would fall into the 200 to 400. So you can get a sense for how many customers. So you do have some customers, about 10%, that use over 1,400 cubic feet per month. One other caveat, all of these rate alternatives are revenue neutral, so they will all produce the exact same amount of revenue. They would all generate 5% more water revenue and 6% more sewer revenue. So we have the same thing on commercial customers. I won't go through this in a lot of detail, but again, a real small commercial, an average commercial, and a large commercial based upon their meter size, you can see there as well that we're increasing that, what their combined bill would be under the current structure, and then what it would be under each of the alternatives. And then we also have it for industrial customers. And then finally for governmental covered customers. And before we move from this, we do have, we've basically run all of your customers through this, so we can email to you a list of how it impacts absolutely every single one of your customers under each of the alternatives, so you can kind of sort it and see the biggest, who gets the biggest hit under each alternative and who would see the smallest increase. It's a lot to print out, so we didn't print it out this evening, but it's actually a bill tabulation of the impact on all customers, which can be helpful to see. So we wanted to show you next some benchmarking, just to show you how you compare to some surrounding jurisdictions in terms of the rates and how they structure their rates. So last time we talked about Batavia, West Chicago, and St. Charles. You can see that they all, based on their water fixed charges, they all base them on meter size. So the larger your meter size, the higher the fixed charge. Batavia uses a uniform rate structure for water charges, so regardless of how much water you use, it's the same unit rate. West Chicago also uses a uniform rate structure, but they do include usage in their fixed charge. Actually, 333 cubic feet are in the fixed charge. And then the most different alternative or comparison would be St. Charles, where they actually have a base rate and a peak usage rate based on your winter quarter average. So if you use a certain amount during the 3 months during the winter, and then in the summer you go over 130% of that, you actually pay a higher rate. So they surcharge you on the water when you go over that rate. We did look at that alternative, but at this time your billing system can't handle it. It's something you could do once you get in the new billing system, which I understand is coming down the road. On the sewer side, one of them, Batavia, used the fixed charge based on meter size. The other two just charge based on number of customers. Both Batavia and St. Charles kind of do the flip of the peak summer charge. They actually cap sewer based upon 130% of the winter use. So once you go over 130% of your winter average, you no longer pay for sewer on that. And then they're similar in that they have a residential and a non-residential uniform rate. West Chicago is similar in that manner. They have the same structure. The actual rates are shown here, so you can see the fixed charges for Batavia, for water, for West Chicago, for St. Charles, and then what they are on the sewer side. You can see that both Batavia and West Chicago have significantly higher fixed charges, particularly when you get to larger meter sizes. And then you can see the actual unit rates for Batavia is currently 287 per 100 cubic feet, West Chicago at 290, and then here's the actual peak rate. So when you go over that 130% in St. Charles, you pay 352 instead of 208. And you can see the unit rates on the sewer side. And then just to give you a real quick picture of, you know, an average residential customer under each of these alternatives. The blue is the water bill. The red is the sewer bill. Here's what it is under your current structure, under alternatives 1, 2, and 3, what it is in Batavia, West Chicago, and St. Charles. And then for a larger customer who has a 3-inch meter, who uses 3,000 cubic feet per month, what it would be in each. And then we have one more piece, which is a scenario analysis. There were a couple questions that were asked at our last meeting in terms of the impact of a couple potential scenarios, the first being what happens if the judicial center is annexed in 2015. And you can see here, again, our proposed increases in water were 5%, 6% each of the years. If they were to come online with the judicial center in 2015, you would have that additional water and sewer sales, so you would actually be able to do less of an increase. Instead of 5%, 2.6% on water, instead of 6%, 4% on sewer. And then the other impact we were asked to look at is what happens if you were to give a credit to non-residential sewer customers based on sewage that doesn't return to this, based on water use that doesn't return to the sewer system. If you were to offer that credit immediately in fiscal year 13 to generate the same amount of revenues, instead of a 6% increase, you need to do a 13.75% increase because you are losing a significant quantity of billable sewage. And now we're open for discussion. We'd like to have, as I mentioned, there's a lot to take in, and hoping that you get a chance to study this, look at it. And then we'd like to try and get any questions and comments emailed to Bob or call him by June 4th so that we can get back and address those and come back with a recommendation.
I think in the interest of the complexity of the subject, I would entertain a motion to waive the rules so people can ask their questions as they see free instead of having to go through the chair.
Motion to waive the rules.
Motion second. By D'Antino, seconded by Singer. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Floor is all of yours, gentlemen. David and Tracy will field your questions, as will Bob and Dan, and I can't imagine there is any.
Yeah. I forgot to mention, we also have a handout.
Oh, way to go.
Yeah. It shows even more bills, just to give you a bigger picture.
Clarifying comment. The last figure you showed regarding the 13.75 rate increase, that's the water evaporation issue, correct? In a nutshell.
Correct.
So when our big clients come to us and say, gosh, you know, our water's not going into this sewer, shouldn't we get a credit
in order? Water that is used in the process.
In the process. Got it. Okay. So swimming pools fall into that too?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, we don't want to get into that because then you're looking at residential.
Okay, got it.
And we would have to separately meter that.
Fair enough. Chuck, all yours, man.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was amused by the 130% numbers used by Batavia and Waits West Chicago. What I remember Bob saying is that we actually have a lot more water going to the sewer than we do coming out of our water. We have a lot. We somehow generate water within our system due to inflow.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Bob? On a yearly basis, we treat more water than we generate.
Right.
Does that ratio change from winter to summer? Is the inflow worse in the winter or worse in the summer?
Well, it's seasonal. When we get a really heavy rainstorm, or if you have we had it in January too, where you get that heavy rainstorm with a snowpack, a lot of infiltration into the system.
So you're saying it's weather related.
It's weather related.
So we'd be very hard pressed to trace that to a customer base, like commercial, industrial, or residential. It would be very hard to figure out how to apportion that excess inflow into the system.
The only comment that I would have to that is that the majority of our inflow is coming from our older areas, which is primarily residential. When you look farther out east into our commercial areas and our industrial areas, we don't have a lot of infiltration in those areas.
Although the older areas of town, like in the first and fifth ward, also have some very old businesses that
absolutely
probably have leaks in the basement and all sorts of other problems going on.
Correct.
So it might not be just residents.
No. But I'm saying it's the vast majority of it is.
You're saying it's the older area of town compared to the newer subdivisions.
Right. All the old clay pipes and that are, you know.
Still down there.
Absolutely.
I was just going to add, typically you see more in residential because you have longer stretches of pipe, so there's more opportunity for inflow. That's what we typically see.
Thank you.
Bob, what is our residential meter size? Is it 3/4?
The majority of the residential meters are three-quarter, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But we are, any new residential that was built, you know, like in Fisher Farms and that area, went to a one-inch meter, but still, the overwhelming majority is three-quarter inch.
Okay.
What is the current increase we have scheduled for this year?
We had already put in place May 1st the increase for the last year, which was a 5% water and 4.25% sewer. So that already went into effect. Yes, that is taken into account, yes.
So we're already doing it for five and...
We're doing a five, but what they're going to be looking at is an additional...
Additional?
Yes, coming this year. So.
Coming next May?
No.
During the year?
During this year, after it's... At the final meeting is when we would be asking to put that into place.
But it would not be retroactive?
No.
So sometime this summer, if this rate structure... The system comes up with a different number, it would occur. It would start sometime July, August, or...
Correct. That's what we're looking at, yes.
But didn't we have a three-year thing, then? So is there another rate increase for next May? Or is that...
No. This was the last year of that three-year increase, yes.
This is the last year? Okay. So then if we did this in June, it would be almost a 10% increase at 2.5, right?
Correct.
Would the future increases occur in May and not in July if we...
Right. We would go back to the May.
So this year would be a real bump because it would be.
Well, it's all taken into account. I don't know how you want to explain that, but
yeah, I mean, we're when we say your current revenues, we're now looking at your current rates that are in place. So we are building on that. So, yeah, it is. If you did a 5%, I didn't think it was that high, but it depends on
it, right. It, overall, I think it was for individual customers, it was more like a 5% overall, whereas the percentages were kind of difficult to put out there to explain it. So, but if you look at someone's average bill, it was usually typical about 5%, so altogether.
So,
you usually see with a 10% rate increase, for example, in that bottom line, how flexible is it?
There's lots of studies. Some say that it's up to 4%. You could potentially see up to a 4% reduction. We typically don't see that, though, that generally the price elasticity of water, because it's so cheap, people don't even notice it, and so they don't respond to that price signal. If you raised rates 100% and really got out and told people about it, you might see more of a reduction, but... To be honest, we generally don't see, even up to about a 20% increase, you don't see people conserve because of that change, because it's fairly inelastic. When you look at the total discretionary spending or total household spending, the water bill is still only, typically it's about 0.5% of the total annual spending for a household. That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I wanted to take a look at the rate comparison on page 29. So in water fixed charges, we've got Batavia at 383, West Chicago at 10, and St. Charles at 496 for a three-quarter inch meter. And what are we in Geneva?
You are currently.
I think it's like a buck.
It's $1.43.
$1.43. And it's been $1.43, Bob, for how long?
I believe last year, or before the May increase, it was $1.39, and then before that, it was like $1.36, something like that. So, pretty long time.
Okay. So, what I was aiming at is our fixed rate is not capturing anything other than an administrative trivial cost. Has been like that for a long time, and I think that's something that needs to be addressed, and that's what you guys are getting at. The second point I was going to make based on this page is what you got to, the overall cost of water, not just in terms of the consumer's basket of goods, but in terms of our area. Don, if they were to seek water, if a consumer were to get frustrated with the price in Geneva, he's not going to really go anyplace and find water any cheaper. You're not going to buy it bottled for any cheaper. You're not going to get it in St. Charles or...
Not supply, not changing supply. I'm talking about
just not using. Right, just not using. Mm-hmm. So
conserving.
What's that?
Conserving.
Which is good, and we want to encourage that anyway. So I think that we're still a bargain is where I was at.
Yeah, our main concern with the fixed charge being so low is that it generates only 3.3% of your revenue. So when you're just you have very volatile revenue stream right now. If it's a wet year, you see it in a potentially a huge swing in the revenues that you see. And that, you know, we would strongly encourage you that it needs to be stabilized, collecting more. Because if we look at your true fixed costs, whether somebody turns on the tap or not, you need to maintain the lines to bring it there. You need to maintain the facilities at the plant. You need to have the operators there. You need the chemicals. So typically, when you really look at those costs that are variable, it's only about 20% at most of those costs are variable. So you're providing a service that's 80% fixed, but at a price of 3.3% fixed currently. So it's a real dichotomy there.
Any question? At what point, if we see additional conservation, and as technology creeps into washing machines and showers and toilets and all those things, at what point do we run into a problem with the percentage of increases that you've outlined here?
Well, we in our four.
Is it conceivable that we could see a degree of conservation that would create a problem with the plan that you've developed, or you're entertaining, or multitudes of plans that you're entertaining?
Well, we have factored in a ongoing reduction in demand, so we are assuming that people are going to continue to use less. I think we're about 0.5% continued decline, where if you look at the historical trend, you've seen over the last couple of years a decrease, but you did see a little bit of a spike up, I believe, in 2007. So if we did a true linear trend, it wouldn't actually be going down, but we are assuming that it's going to continue to go down. If people stop, if they start reducing usage by, 5%, start decreasing usage by 5%, that would have an impact. I would argue, though, that as you move more and more across to the fixed charge, that's going to help stabilize that. So it does have an offsetting effect. But to the effect that we overcompensate for conservation, we're essentially going to be generating more revenues than we would need. So it is a balancing between the two.
At which point we could reduce rates in the second or third year if it was clear that,
correct,
that the current thing is actually recession-driven and that the recession is slowly going away and that we get back to a flat or slightly increasing curve.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Speaking of which, this has been a very warm spring. Is our water usage up this spring? Extremely warm.
We have certainly seen days that it's up. But it's hard to tell if it's people out there watering a lot or if it's also the contribution of Encore. So it's kind of hard to tell. I think it's probably 60% of it's probably Encore versus watering. So.
Where did you say the fixed cost had debt service buried in hand, or did they not?
We are not including debt service in that because it's about 30% of your revenue requirements, so it would make the fixed charge really high. Yeah. Yep.
So how are we covered?
It's covered by the usage rate. I mean, you could argue we're not necessarily. I mean, we're setting, getting to 20% would be more of an industry standard. We're setting, like I said, 80% of your costs are fixed, which would be debt service as well. So we could say that once you get to 20%, we're covering 20% of debt service if you wanted to dedicate it in that way. But we wouldn't, main reason not to go to that 30% would be that it would be such a high fixed charge. It would really impact the small user.
Well, isn't the other argument that the size of our debt is because of the size of our plant, and the size of our plant is driven by volume, not by number of customers?
True.
You've compared this to Batavia, West Chicago, and St. Charles. But do you have towns of 25,000 to 50,000 that you look at and say, these are really solid benchmarks? They get fewer complaints. They have steady water rates. They are geographically similar to us as far as north versus south. Something that you would recommend. I see a number of alternatives, but do you have specific recommendations on from similar towns?
AWWA does have a survey that provides a cross-section by size of jurisdiction. Based on our experience, those that the higher your fixed charge from a financial perspective, the better off you are. We want your fixed charge to be as high as possible because that generates a guaranteed amount of cash flow. So from a financial consultant perspective, that's what we want to see. To be completely honest, the current rate structure that you have in place with the declining blocks makes sense under the cost of service approach because it's collecting the correct amount of revenue from those customers. And you do have an ample supply of water. I don't know that you're necessarily where we would go in and recommend a real strong conservation type structure would be where somebody, once they reach this threshold, they're going to have to spend $20 million to expand their plant. If you were bumping up against that, if you were in a mode in Southern California or something like that where there's just a different environment, a more conservation rate structure would make sense. But we didn't want to demonstrate that. But as far as we can certainly provide you with some different comparisons than the three that we've provided.
Would it have the same type of debt service that we would be having to chunk down, so to say? Those towns have the same type of debt service, meaning would they have had the facility that they built out, would they also have that?
Well, you're going to see a wide range of debt service. We talked about it last time, and that our threshold, we recommend that you try not to have more than 30% of your revenues go to debt service. So in our financial plan, we've recommended that you don't issue any more debt service going forward, that you cash fund or use a PAYGO approach for your capital plan because you're at that threshold right now on the water side. But recognizing the fact that you did do a major capital project, if we were doing this before the water plant, we wouldn't have told you to cash fund the water plant. It makes sense to issue debt. It's a long-lived asset. You're paying it off as people are using it. It matches the use of the asset. So it's an appropriate approach to use. We have clients that have been in a growth mode that have 50% of their revenues go to debt service. And we have clients who are currently working for the city of Wheaton who has absolutely no debt whatsoever. So there's a broad range of where people are on that scale. But I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Alderman Cummings said that he wanted to see if there were other communities that were similar to ours, and so I just wanted to put the factor in that we had a new facility.
Also, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was trying to.
Sure.
I've been led to believe that our surrounding communities have not yet met the EPA standards. Am I correct in that assumption?
I'm not aware of that, Bob.
As far as compliance, I believe that they're in compliance. St. Charles just went through a major improvement for one of their facilities. Batavia did pretty much the same time that we did, obviously. It's a little bit different in the water that they provide, though, compared to what we do. Ours is not only meets any future regulations that come out, or at least we have a very good possibility of meeting all the future regulations. We're also softening the water. It's higher quality water in general that we're providing in comparison to St. Charles and Batavia. West Chicago is softened. They just use a different technique than we do.
So have you taken into those additional, would that then and say that to be an additional cost for these communities to provide the service of water, and has that been taken into account in these calculations?
We're not calculating. All we're doing is saying, okay, what rates do you have on the books right now? What they are right now. We don't. Most jurisdictions won't tell you what they're going to be going forward. And and this is the challenge, in that it's often an apples and orange comparison because you don't know where they are. They may not be taking care of their infrastructure, and they may be able to keep their rates extremely low, but there's going to be a point in time where they'll have to ratchet them up. Mm-hmm. And you're essentially, you've taken care of the water plant, you're now going to start addressing more aggressive main replacement. So you're tackling the big issues, but we don't really know. I don't have the personal experience with these three communities to tell you whether they're going to keep seeing increases. I do know those in DuPage County that purchase water from DuPage Water Commission and from the City of Chicago are all seeing the increases that are coming from the city. Yeah, they're huge increases because of what the city's having to do to replace its infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So it's a national issue. Everybody's, you know, we say that this is the age of renewal where we have to reinvest in the systems. At some point, everybody's going to have to address it, but I don't know exactly where they are on that scale.
You want to summarize again the process here and what you're going to be bringing back to us?
Yep. Yeah, what we'd like to do is, like I said, we've presented you with a lot of information tonight. If you'd like the bill tabulation that presents the impact of all these alternatives on all the customers, we can email that to you. We'd like to have comments and questions that you have to Bob by June 4th. We'll then get responses back to those. We want to come then back on June 25th with our recommendation in terms of the rate structure, the financial plan. We'd like to tailor that based upon the input from the council, what's most important to you in terms of what you see happening in the rate structures. It's a lot to take in, particularly when you're changing structures. Prior to the meeting on the 25th, we will have a written document that documents the work. And then from that point forward, I believe the plan is to potentially have something that you could adopt and put in place following that meeting on the 25th.
As far as the process with the council, is there a public hearing with this, or how would that be handled?
No, it's a public meeting, but not a public hearing. It would be an ordinance amendment, and then the official vote would be July 2nd, I believe we said.
Yeah.
And then the billing then would be would start after that, I believe that we said, with the immediate billing on perhaps it was the 9th, I think. Yeah. But it would be effective as of that vote going forward. So we're trying to capture 10 months out of this fiscal year.
So it would be at the committee.
When would the...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dean. I thought you were done.
No, I was just wondering, when is New World going to be at a point where we could handle the... The process, the billing approach used in St. Charles.
Where we're at is we're just starting utility billing at the end of this month with the discovery phase. The actual implementation will take a year, so we're looking at the start. It doesn't even go live probably till June of 2013.
Thank you.
So we would have this at a COW meeting on the 25th, and we would vote on that change, and then the city council meeting on
the following. Correct.
If it was approved on the 25th.
If it was recommended for approval on the 25th.
There could be some requests for clarification or slight change, in which case it would take one more round of two meetings.
And that's why we're asking for comments and questions by June 4th, so that we can try to take those into consideration and factor those in to any recommendation that we come back with on the 25th.
But it was suggested that we would get the recommendation before the meeting on the 25th. Can I ask that it be more than just one weekend before? Because sometimes when we get the packet on a Thursday and we've already planned to be out of town Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we don't get to read the packet. So it would be nice if we get it at least a week before the meeting if we're expected to take a vote on something this important.
I'm certain that's doable. I'll defer to Mr. Van Gesken, but that's going to require all of us to get our questions in even earlier, probably.
No. You know my point.
I respect that.
This could be an important meeting on the 25th.
And oh, sure.
Just happened to be out of town that weekend and can't read the packet.
Obviously, the sooner we can get going on with answering the questions and comments, the better. Obviously, that's something that I would, you know, defer to Dave and make sure that they can get their things done in time too. So
that's my first request. Then, if possible, can we get it more than sure. 4 days ahead of the meeting? Thank you.
May I get a PDF of this?
Sure. Better yet, an Excel file.
Anything else for our guest who has an early flight? Where are you off to next?
Back to Maryland. Yeah.
Any questions from any of the guests in the audience? Thank you, Dave.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Tracy, great job. Thank you. We move on to our final item of business tonight, an important one indeed, the presentation of the fiscal year 2011-12 City of Geneva Annual Report.
Nice logo.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and City Council. Tonight I'm presenting the fiscal year 2011-12 annual report to you and the community. I will be presenting these by department. You should have a copy of the annual report in your packet. I'm not going to be covering everything that's in the report, but just highlighting a few things. This will be posted on the city's website for the community, and we will be making some hard copies available at reception at City Hall for any of our citizens that want to stop in and pick up a copy. To begin with, as you all know, the city staff worked with the mayor and other departments for several months to plan and organize the centennial celebration commemorating the 100th anniversary of the construction of City Hall. Staff researched the history of the building for the celebration that we held on Saturday the 19th. We collected pictures of the building, commissioned a logo which was used for marketing as well as the creation of a commemorative coin, and developed a program for the event including building tours, a community photo, and a performance by the Geneva High School Marching Band. Excuse me, items in the 1912 time capsule, which are on permanent display in our vestibule, and memorabilia for the new time capsule is going to be placed in and relocated in the same corner of the building that the 1912 time capsule was located in. We did have descendants of Mayor Marstiller in attendance. I'm not sure if you got to meet Connie Jones, but she was the great granddaughter of Mayor Marstiller, and she was here, and we were pleased to have her join us. City Hall was also rededicated at the celebration in memory of Chuck Lencioni, building commissioner from 1986 to 2010. My office worked with Assistant City Administrator Stephanie Dawkins and other staff to initiate a volunteer day at Northern Illinois Food Bank, and several aldermen, city staff, and their respective family members volunteered on Saturday, January 21st, to fill backpacks with food for elementary age school children. My office worked with the fire department staff and researched and drafted a recreational fire ordinance. Regulations in the ordinance allow small recreational fires under limited and specific conditions. The ordinance was presented to the council and adopted on November 7th, 2011. The City of Geneva received the Government Finance Officer Association's Distinguished Budget Award for fiscal year 11-12 for the second year in a row. Staff also worked with the Geneva Park District, the Kane County Forest Preserve District, and other city staff to develop the community gardens at Prairie Green. And the gardens are a design element, as you know, that was approved in the Prairie Green design plan many years ago. Approximately 124 garden plots are initially being offered for the public to lease, and I believe those have all been leased at this point, with a potential expansion in the future. Kane County donated the garden plot land, the City of Geneva provided the water utility, and the Geneva Park District constructed the garden plots and oversees the administration of the program. The city store at City Hall had another successful year selling city merchandise. The store offers items such as pens, coffee mugs, and other memorabilia for sale to the public. The city began offering a collectible series of holiday pewter ornaments for sale in 2010-11, and the 2012 ornament is currently available in a limited supply, recognizing City Hall's 100th anniversary. One of the ornaments will be included in the new time capsule box. I was fortunate enough, along with Alderman Vogelsberg, to work with the Geneva Girl Scouts to dedicate a tree in honor of Girl Scouts USA 100th anniversary. The Geneva Girl Scouts Forever Green Project raised over $600, which was donated to the city, and a Japanese ivory silk lilac tree was planted and dedicated on Arbor Day, April 27th of this year. I worked with the economic development staff to create the Outdoor Music Geneva program. This past year, we had 16 grants that were awarded to four different businesses, and approximately 3,000 people attended these events. In the Administrative Services Department, the Conservation Foundation, along with the Strategic Plan Advisory Committee and the Natural Resources Committee, provided funding and manpower to design and install a rain garden at the James Street entrance of City Hall. This project was part of a larger educational program by the Conservation Foundation. We had two new employees join our finance staff this past year. Andrea Feringall joined the finance division team in July in the position of accounting supervisor. Andrea brought a wealth of experience, having worked as the accounting assistant for the village of South Elgin for 7 years. Upon the retirement of Ellen Burmeyer from the position of human resources manager, the city hired Lisa Jepson. Lisa comes from the city of Wooddale, where she was employed in various positions for 17 years, most recently working for the past eight as the Human Resources Administrator. The City of Geneva, through the Strategic Plan Advisory Committee and Geneva High School, partnered again this year for the 11th anniversary of the Student Government Program. The program provides a forum for city officials to interact with Geneva students. This year, 22 students participated in a morning of shadowing various city staff, followed by lunch and roundtable discussions with elected officials from both the city and the school district. The Natural Resources Committee, in partnership with the Geneva Park District and various other entities, sponsored their annual Earth Day event titled A Healthy Community, Healthy Earth, on April 21st at Peck Farm Park. The event was a huge success with nearly 500 people attending. From our Community Development Department, the Community Development staff has been working on the Downtown Master Plan, as you know, and the city's planning consultant team prepared a draft of the Geneva Downtown Station Area Master Plan. The purpose of the plan is to chart an overall vision for the future of the downtown while providing specific recommendations for improvement. The draft plan is a result of multifaceted planning processes and included inventory and analysis of downtown trends and conditions, community workshops, and surveys. Over the next several months, we will complete the process, and a recommendation will come forward to the City Council for consideration. The draft plan includes redevelopment concepts for 7 opportunity sites, incorporating row houses, apartments, condominiums, commercial, office, light industrial, mixed use, civic and government facilities, and adaptive reuse of buildings. It will also include recommendations for parking decks and parking lots, street extensions, and recommendations for a new festival activated right-of-way. A comprehensive revision of the city's sign regulations was completed, which was later adopted by the City Council. The new regulations include many of the same provisions as before, but it also added new provisions that offer greater flexibility on the types of business identification signs that may be installed. Several new types of signs are now allowed, including projecting signs, on and off-premise directional signs, and temporary A-frame signs. With the assistance of the Public Works Department, the Community Development Department completed the city's official zoning map and updated it, along with enhancements that improve map legibility. And finally, the Community Development Department worked with staff from the King County Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Model Ordinance Task Force, say that fast 10 times, which guided the formulation of a model zoning regulation and design guidelines. They ended up locating and installing an electrical vehicle charging station at the King County Courthouse. And you can see it there on the day that it was dedicated. And that's on the west side of the courthouse. And from our Economic Development Department, new retailers on Randall Road include H.H. Gregg, Tilly's, Rue 21, Five Below, Charming Charlie's, National Tire and Battery, and Fan's Edge. Much work was done on the business retention program and the business recruitment program. This chart shows business activity for the period between May 1st and April 30th of 2011 to 2012. A new Geneva Economic Development Commission was appointed. In conjunction with the Fox Valley Folk Music and Storytelling Festival, the economic development staff facilitated a live broadcast of WFMT's Midnight Special Concert, the first time ever from outside the WFMT studios. The Economic Development Department coordinated several programs which all downtown merchants had the option of participating in. One of them was Sundays Are Special, which was new in 2011. Also, Customer Friendly Hours Program, the 4th Annual Fall in Love with Downtown Geneva Promotion Program, and Live Windows on State during the Christmas Walk. The fire department hosted a team of peer assessors which spent 4 days inspecting, interviewing, and evaluating all internal and external functions of the organization. This is the third time in 10 years the department has been successfully evaluated and awarded accredited status by the Commission of Fire Service and Accreditation. This places the fire department in an elite group of 180 departments nationwide, 13 of which are in Illinois. The fire department has come a long way from the horse-drawn days in the early 1900s. In February, delivery was taken for a 2012 heavy-duty rescue pumper manufactured by Pierce of Appleton, Wisconsin. It replaces a 23-year-old short wheelbase unit that served primarily as a support and rescue vehicle. The department instituted the use of Apple iPods for field inspections in the in-service companies funded in part by a grant from Factory Mutual Insurance. The devices, thank you, eliminated the need for paper forms and the manual entry of the inspection of records into the database. The process uses access to a cloud server to upload and download records into the field units. Completed inspections are now emailed to businesses, nearly eliminating postage costs. The members of the fire department constructed and dedicated a memorial for Lieutenant Chuck Lucioni, who passed away in 2010, as well as all members, past, present, and future, for their dedication to the residents of Geneva. Donations funded the cost of the materials, and off-duty firefighters donated their time and skills to build the memorial. And the fire and police departments together hosted the 6th annual Risk Watch Academy for Geneva residents between kindergarten and second grade. This was the first year the program had a waiting list of students who wanted to participate. The curriculum covers a variety of safety subjects for children that includes recognizing traffic signs and signals, fire safety, evacuating a school bus, just to name a few. Our police department. $2,000 in grant funding was received from the Kane County Health Department, and approximately $2,400 in grant funding was also received from the Illinois Liquor Commission. These were used toward educational training and enforcement programs. The police department was fortunate to acquire two new vehicles in fiscal year 11-12 as part of the regular vehicle rotation schedule. The two acquired were Ford Crown Victorias to be used in the patrol division. These vehicles were much needed and are definitely being put to good use as marked squad cars. The Geneva police handled a total of 15,174 incidents in 2011 and experienced a 26% reduction in Part 1 crime index crimes in 2011. Fundraising efforts by the police department were successful, resulting in a total of $12,073 being collected for the Illinois Special Olympics. Officer Chuck Parisi and Sergeant Dan Cott once again played a very important role in the raising of funds this year. The department's commitment to the youth of this community was demonstrated once again through the many programs developed and presented during this past fiscal year. The Child Safety Seat Program, Camp Risk Watch, Project Alert, Internet Safety Programs, and classroom instruction related to driver's education were all administered and presented to children ranging in ages from 6 years through high school. Oops, let me go back. Geneva Police Commander Eric Passarelli completed Northwestern University's 10-week police staff and command school and graduated from the Executive Leadership and Management course on January 13th. We congratulate Commander Passarelli for excelling in such a challenging program. And finally, one of the police department's goals during the past year was to provide an increased police presence in the downtown business district to enhance the safety of pedestrians, motorists, and shoppers alike. To that end, in addition to the regular amount of patrol time normally spent in this area, the police department was able to supplement the coverage with an additional 145 hours of designated foot patrols, 168 hours of designated bike patrols, and 200 additional hours of other dedicated traffic enforcement specifically for this area. From our Public Works Department, the North Central Bike Trail, the City Engineering and Street Divisions worked together to place an aggregate bike path along the abandoned railroad right-of-way, beginning at Stevens, running along Wheeler Park, and connecting to the bike path leading to St. Charles. The 2011 street program included the resurfacing of 16 roads throughout Geneva. All design and construction engineering for the project, including material testing, was performed in-house. Elm Street culvert replacement was of a 40-year-old material metal culvert with an HDPE liner, and because the culvert was lined rather than dug up and actually replaced, there was minimum disruption to the roadway, the stream, and the neighborhood. Design of the roadway and the project was performed by an outside consultant with construction engineering performed in-house. Manchester Alley. In 2010, the engineering division attended a meeting with citizens living in the Manchester Alley area to participate in a discussion about the repair of the alley. Based on the outcome of this discussion, the city committed to providing engineering design services for the project, and last year the council authorized replacement of the east half of the alley with new concrete pavement. In the fall of 2011, the council authorized the improvement of the west half of the alley with new concrete pavement. All design and construction engineering for the project, excluding material testing, was performed in-house. And as you all know, we have a new street superintendent, Chris Bong, who was formerly our civil engineer for the city and started in his new position on April 2nd. This concludes the 2011-2012 annual report. Looking back over the past year gives us an opportunity to acknowledge and appreciate what has been accomplished and better understand what we need to do in the future. It's a time to give credit to the mayor and the city council for their exceptional leadership, to our dedicated and professional city employees who provide excellent customer service for the best value possible, and to our devoted citizens who contribute to the outstanding quality of life in our community through their volunteerism. This is what makes Geneva the first-class community that it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Any comments or questions for the city administrator?
Yeah, very nice presentation.
It was a nice presentation.
Other than my voice, and I apologize for that. Too much talking on Saturday, I guess.
Is that what it was? No comments, questions for the city administrator? Anyone from the audience?
Well, some of that will be in the actual final printed version. Is that correct?
All of that and more, much more.
Okay. Yeah. And the version online as well, of course. Yes. Thank you.
Any last-minute new business or anything else? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Marks, seconded by Singer. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Great. Good night, everyone.